The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Yes. So today I thought I'd offer the opportunity for questions. And the way I like to do this, what seems to be the most comfortable for people, is that I'll take, say, four to five questions. We'll see what the questions are, and I'll decide how many to take once I hear the questions. And I'll write them down, and then I will kind of create a talk out of those questions. So, what are your questions? And speak into the mic.
Okay. What is the best way to remain in your state of peace if you're dealing with a person who's insistent upon taking you out of your peace? Any techniques or visualization you'd recommend?
So what's the best way to stay connected with a peaceful attitude when you're dealing with somebody who's kind of pulling you out of that?
Right.
Okay. So a daily life practice question. Anyone else? It's a quiet group tonight. Okay.
What would be the best way, would you say, to protect yourself energetically? You know how we all have auras and all that to, you know, any kind of technique if you're, you know, in someone's aura that's, you know, a lower vibration and you're trying to put up kind of a shield, per se?
It sounds like a very similar question to the first one in a way.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, one is energetically, one is more, I'd say, emotionally. Like, you don't want to get angry.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to allow that person, as you say, pull you out of your peace or out of that state. The other one is more of a like an aura energetically. You don't want them to allow them, you know, to penetrate your strong aura or whatever.
Okay.
So.
Okay, and then Mary. No, it's okay. You can go first.
Can this question be about anything?
Anything. Absolutely.
So, I guess, in your studies, do you know if the Buddha ever said that it's okay to lie? You know, if you, for instance, if some person was going to come and they're looking for people and they're going to cause violence, did he ever say, go that way?
Okay. Mary.
So I was just thinking no one else was going to ask a question.
It's okay, I need more.
Does anyone else have a question?
I was just wondering, through various Buddhist meditative practices, is it possible to practice enough that you get very much more in tune with how your thoughts are affecting your physical body? And maybe then the second question is, if you can get to that, connection or appreciation, is there a way to then gently control your thoughts so that they don't have such a detrimental effect on your day-to-day life?
Okay, that's a great question. And that's probably enough now, because that covers a wide terrain. Let's see, how do we want to start? I think I'll start with a question about, did the Buddha ever say it was okay to lie? And then move into the other, into the questions about the energetic state and the staying in the state of peace when dealing with people. So, you know, the teachings that the Buddha offers on ethical conduct, is this really a question around ethical conduct, are fairly nuanced. There's a way in which they seem like they're not nuanced, because there's a precept that the precepts that we explore as practices, essentially, and one of those practices, one of those precepts, they're very similar to the what we could think about as like commandments. You know, they're to refrain from taking life, to refrain from taking things that are not given, to refrain from stealing, to refrain from false speech, to refrain from sexual misconduct, to refrain from intoxicants. So these are guidelines that the Buddha offers us. And you know, the guidelines are around, it's not so much about right and wrong, these guidelines. It's more around what leads to suffering and what helps to support moving away from suffering. And in general, he said that these activities, taking life, taking what's not given, speaking falsely, sexual misconduct, and intoxicating the mind, will tend to lead us to suffering. And they tend to be based in states of mind. It tends to be when we take those actions in our bodies and in our speech, when we take those actions, we tend to be acting out of not so helpful states of mind. So we tend to be acting out of states of aversion or greed or confusion when we take those actions. And so the exploration around these is to look at them. I like to think of them almost as mindfulness bells. You know, look at this, activity. If you're getting ready to do one of these activities, and you know, just like, you know, you're picking up a shoe to hit a spider on the wall, it's like, look at what's going on in your mind there. You know, is there aversion in your mind as you're getting ready to kill this spider? And to see if you can, instead of just taking the action on that aversion, to see if you can find another way to relate to that aversion. Not to try to repress it, but perhaps to be open to the aversion, to be open to what's going on, and maybe seeing if you can find another way to navigate that situation than by following through on that action that would result in that harmful condition. So, around lying, the Buddha actually recommended to never lie. He did tell his son never to speak a falsehood, even as a joke, you know, not to even do that kind of an expression. And at the same time, I mean, I think we really need to look at what the whole picture is. So in the example that comes to my mind in what you mentioned is something along the lines of people lying to hide Jews that were in in Germany in the Second World War. You know, people, the Gestapo coming to their door and saying, "Do you have any Jews in this house?" And people saying no. You know, that it being a lie, them knowing it's a lie. And if I were in that kind of situation at this point, I would lie. I would say no. I would take that consequence, essentially. So, in that, you look at what we're looking at is what are the trade-offs here? I mean, there's really harmful consequences to many involved if you don't lie in that situation. There may be some minor harmful consequence to you, or depending on the situation, it could be even a bigger harmful consequence to you for doing that. But the minor harmful consequence might be something along the lines of your mind spins around. What if they find out? Oh no! What if they find out? What if they find out that I've lied? You know, so there's some, the Buddha teaches that there's some kind of rebound on the mind for having done these things. But for me, I would take this and I'd look at it and say, people dying or having some agitation of mind, which am I going to take? You know, which direction am I going to go? Well, I'll deal with the agitation of mind. So the way the Buddha taught ethical conduct is pretty nuanced in that, it's not, he doesn't say that, if you do this, then there's going to be certain kind of automatic consequences. You know, that's not the way and the Buddha taught this not as, somebody is up there judging things, or that there's not somebody kind of keeping score, but it's more about he taught the rebound that happens for us in our experience as we have engaged in activities that perhaps caused harm. He talked about that rebound as being just a natural unfolding. Natural consequences. So, for instance, that example I gave of the mind getting agitated after telling a lie, that's kind of a natural consequence of having told that lie. It's not that there's somebody up there keeping score. It's just this is the way the mind works. When we behave in certain ways, it tends to affect us, impact us. And this is what the Buddha was pointing to. And he did talk about, he said, there's some people who might do a minor unwholesome action. Something like, telling a lie in a situation like this, I would consider that a minor unwholesome act, that it's so outweighed by the good in that situation. It's like you've got the wholesomeness of protecting life there. And protecting not only the lives of the people, but protecting people from harming other people. There's really wholesome consequences to that kind of action. So that is kind of, coming into your mind stream at the same time, the compassion. And that's also rebounding on your mind. So the Buddha said that somebody may do a minor unwholesome action and for the most part not feel it much at all. That there wouldn't be that much rebound on the mind. He said another person might do that same unwholesome action and have it like just completely send them into very distressed states. So it kind of depends on what's surrounding it. Somebody tells a minor lie and that's like on top of many other lies, it might, and that there's not this mitigating circumstance around, the compassion that's involved in the exploration, in the telling of that lie. if there's not the mitigating circumstances, then, you know, just think in your own experience, how does it impact you? You know, it tends to have a stronger impact. So, you know, the teachings are pretty nuanced, and what I usually suggest people do is to look at your motivation. You know, look inside when you are getting ready to act. And the Buddha actually suggested this to his son in that very same text in which he talked, said to his son, you know, Rahula, you shouldn't tell a lie even as a joke. He went on to say to his son, he said, you know, anytime you're getting ready to act, before you act, think about the consequences. Is it going to cause harm to anybody? If it is, then don't do that action. And while you're doing an action, think about the consequences. Is it going to cause harm to anybody, either to yourself or others? And if it is causing harm, then stop that action. And then he went on to say, and after you've done that action, reflect back on what's happened. And if it had caused harm, then make effort to not go there in the future, so that we essentially learn from our mistakes. You know, that we're going to make mistakes. So it's, you know, these ethical precepts aren't put out there as, you know, thou shalt not, and, you know, you're going to hell if you do this. It's much more subtle than that, much more kind of look at what's going on, look at the intention in your heart when you are taking an action. Now, you know, this kind of situation, that's an extreme kind of situation that I brought up in that, for that example. You might think another kind of example of, you know, somebody, and I'll just give it from my own perspective. You know, there are times when people ask me, can you do this? And, you know, if it's phrased in that way, looking at my schedule, well, technically, I might say, I might, you know, the can you do this? You know, well, yes, I can do it, but is it really, does it work for me to do it? And so I used to have to feel like I had to justify myself. And now what I instead, and I don't lie about this, but I just say, you know, this does not work for my schedule. The timing of this doesn't work for my schedule. And I don't need to explain, you know, how my schedule as a whole works. So, you know, I used to feel like I was lying. I used to say something like, no, I'm busy then, or no, I can't do that. And for me, that's gotten to the place where that feels uncomfortable to speak in that way. Because, well, technically I could do that, and I'm not busy at that time. But when I look at my schedule as a whole, I need time for myself. And so, no, that timing doesn't work for my schedule. So thinking about my schedule as a whole. So, you know, there are ways to explore speech, you know, in ways that we think, well, I'm just going to tell this minor little lie to not hurt their feelings. And you might, in that kind of a situation, explore, is there some other way to speak or some other way to engage than telling one of these little white lies? You know, is there some other just explore that possibility that there might be some other way to speak about what, you know, if a kind of a white lie is the first thing that comes into your mind, just think about other things that you might say. And I thought about this one a lot. You know, it didn't immediately come to my mind how to respond to a situation like that. And so I actually spent some time reflecting on it. You know, what might I say in that kind of a situation? So does that speak to your question? So then the questions about remaining peaceful emotionally when you're dealing with somebody who's taking you away from that. There's several pieces to look at here, and I think both of these questions from the perspective of the way I'm going to speak about it, the question about protecting yourself energetically when you're in somebody who has a very powerful energetic field that feels like it's kind of invading you. The way I'm going to speak about this, I think, in both situations, there's kind of similar explorations. The second question, in fact, you know, the notion of auras and energetic fields, things like that, that's not really in the conceptual framework of Buddhism. So, you know, just to put that out there. We explore our experience in terms of our mind states and our body feelings, our bodily feelings, and our emotions. But there can be, for some people, this strong sense of energetic experience, and so I'll speak to that to some extent. So let's see how to explore this. So first, the first piece to recognize, I think, in both of these situations, is that whatever's happening between us and another person, if it feels like that person is invading us in some way, either by, you know, what they're doing or how they're speaking or what their energetic state is, you know, if it feels like somebody is coming into us in some way, part of the understanding that I've come to really appreciate and know kind of more in my own experience is that we have to allow that. You know, that people can't do that without our consent. It's not that in you know, somebody is actually taking us out of a state of peace. We are allowing them to take us out of a state of peace. Or likewise, you know, we are kind of allowing them to use your language, to kind of invade us energetically. So this exploration is one of how am I participating in this? You know, and some of the participation here is, you know, is conditioned. You know, that from our whole history of the way that we were raised, the way that our parents treated us, the way we dealt with people in the schoolyard, what happened to us in all kinds of situations, you know, our conditioning led us to have certain kinds of triggers, for instance. I think we all have this idea or kind of a notion of buttons. You know, so-and-so is pushing my buttons. Well, those buttons have been created from our conditioning. So, you know, brothers or sisters doing certain things, and then, or parents behaving in a certain way, and then when somebody comes along and kind of reminds you of that, even at a very deep emotional level, it may not be conscious, but at a very deep emotional level, it's like you get pulled into those patterns again. And what I sometimes like to explore is the possibility that, so those buttons that we have, it feels like somebody's reaching in and actually pushing it, but what actually it is happening is that those buttons are kind of being worn on the outside of us, you know, kind of like we're offering those buttons to people. So part of the exploration is, and this is a slow practice, and for me I found this to be, you know, there's not really a quick fix, but it's a very rewarding process to go through, to begin to explore, how do my buttons get pushed? You know, what's happening when my buttons get pushed? What's happening in me when my buttons get pushed? Not focusing so much on what's happening out there, on who's doing it and how they should change. I mean, often what we tend to go to is, rather than exploring, well, what's going on about my buttons. We try to figure out a way to control our environment so that people don't push our buttons, rather than looking at, well, how are those buttons being exposed? How am I offering that button? We tend to look at, well, how can I teach that person to not do that? Or something like that. So it tends to be that we focus outwardly rather than looking at, well, what's happening? What's actually happening? So one of the explorations, and I'm going to go through several practices here. You asked for some practices, and I'm going to kind of go through a variety of things. And the first thing that I'd suggest is to get interested in the fact that that button has gotten pushed, interested in the fact that you're being pulled out of a peaceful state in this situation. Get familiar with what's happening for yourself there. Just in a very gentle way, just kind of notice, okay, what's going on? What's happening? What's happening in my body? Am I contracted? Am I fearful? What has this brought up for me? What kind of thoughts has it brought up for me? What kind of emotions has it brought up for me? So just kind of take an inventory of what's going on for you when this happens. Not being judgmental about it, not needing to say it's wrong or bad that this has happened, which is more like, oh, okay, this has happened. And you may begin to notice that certain kinds of patterns repeat a lot. You know, that the certain person may be able to say just the right word to take you out of your peaceful state, you know, just that or certain thoughts can take you out of your peaceful state. So, you know, just kind of get familiar with your own patterns around this. And for me, you know, I explored, for quite a long time, I explored a pattern of anger, because anger kept, like, popping up. And it was not small anger. I mean, it actually was getting in the way of my life, getting in the way of living my life in a kind of functional way. And so I just began to say, okay, well, this pattern's happening a lot. Let me explore it. Let me start looking at it. And so I initiated a kind of an exploration for myself around this pattern. And I learned a lot about myself. One of my teachers kind of talks about it like data gathering. You know, every time that happens to you, you learn a little bit more about how you expose that button. You learn just a little bit more about yourself. This is a long-term project. You know, I spent months looking at my anger before I really began to have some deeper insights into it. So, you know, that's one practice, is just beginning to explore what's going on for you when that happens. And this is kind of the first layer, the first kind of set of practice that I'd suggest. Because ultimately, we need to learn about ourselves in order to free ourselves from this pattern. We can have some quick fixes that we might put on. So some practices that we do, like, okay, like the, you know, the breathe, count to 10, that kind of thing. You could play with something like that when somebody says something or is doing something that kind of is taking you out of a peaceful place. You can do some kind of conscious things. But those tend to be kind of overlays on the situation. It doesn't really address the underlying reasons why the reactivity happens in the first place. And so this exploration of, well, what's going on? As I said, you know, each time it's like a little bit of data is gathered. You get a little bit more information about yourself. And what I found in that process of exploring anger for myself, I got a little bit more data each time I noticed the anger. And I did it in a very simple way. You know, it's like I just, okay, here's anger again. I said I'd pay attention. Okay, how does this feel? Well, this feels pretty yucky this time. Okay, yep, yucky. That's how it feels. I guess I just go on with my day. And so just, you know, for a few moments, taking in what does it feel like? And just beginning to notice what you learn about your anger in that kind of situation. So it took, for me, it took several months before I began to really get some insight into it, but I didn't have to figure out the insights. The mind, through having explored, having understood little bits of piece of information at a time, the mind began to put it together. The mind began to understand. It's just like it was happening almost in spite of me. This understanding was happening almost in spite of me. So I got a real confidence or trust in the, you know, this gentle, simple exploration. What's happening just in a moment? What's happening around this pattern? How is this pattern triggered? And just imagine as an analogy for this kind of small gathering of data, and I've probably used this analogy in this class before, but imagine the first people who went out and looked up at the stars. The first Homo sapiens who began to notice the stars and wonder about them. And the first time you go out and look at the stars, it's kind of like just a mass of random pattern, you know, random, almost chaotic. And then, you know, you keep going out night after night, you just go out and you look, and you look, and you look, and you begin to see that there are certain patterns up there, and you may begin to orient to certain shapes in the sky. You know, those three stars together, they kind of look like a belt. And look, if you follow those three stars down, there's a bright star down there. So you begin to kind of get your orientation to the stars. And over time, over the course of a year, you begin to see that those stars don't come up in the same place every night. They kind of parade across the sky. But there's new stars that are appearing at different times of the year. And that roughly at various times of the year, the same stars are up there. And then you might begin to notice certain things that look like stars, but while everything else seems to stay put and reliably, there are those three stars, and there's that bright one down there, and there's that one that looks like a question mark, a backwards question mark. You begin to see these others that are kind of moving through the field. You begin to track those. Just imagine how long it took for us to know as much about the stars as we know. Night after night, just going out there, gathering data. So it's kind of a long-term project, this gathering data. And the mind itself, the wisdom, the intuition of the mind begins to put together the patterns that we see, actually. That's what I've seen in my own practice, that the mind itself begins to understand how these buttons are created. And begins to understand how to kind of like pull back and retract those buttons, actually. It's like, oh, that button is getting exposed. You know, that doesn't need to be happening. You know, I don't have to go there. So that's the first exploration I'd encourage, is to see, can you actually be willing to investigate, explore these times when we're feeling invaded? Now, at times, it can feel kind of overwhelming to be, you know, these buttons are out there so fast and being pushed so fast, and it's like there's no way almost to really be balanced around an investigation. And it can feel at times like we're being overwhelmed by something. We're being overwhelmed by anger. We're being overwhelmed by frustration or some difficult state of mind in an interaction. If it feels overwhelming, I often suggest, okay, then it's time to take some action. Then it's time to perhaps maybe do the counting to 10 or something like that. See if you can. What I often suggest, and this comes through the teachings of the Buddha, is to see if there's any way to connect with wisdom that you know for yourself. Like something along the lines of, yeah, this this state that's happening right now, this overwhelming feeling that's happening right now, this is impermanent. It's not going to last. Or it's not so helpful to have this reactivity right now. You know, actually kind of using reflection, reminding yourself, you know, it's not so helpful to get angry right now. I've seen this pattern before. And so while it, or let's say it's not so helpful to act on this anger right now, but rather to, okay, can I notice this this movement towards anger and then try to bring something more wholesome into my mind? Maybe wishing myself well right now. May I be more easeful right now? May there be a little bit more balance in my mind right now? Something to just incline the mind more towards balance. And then depending on the situation, you know, you might explore something more, even more firm, like being very clear with this person. You know, this situation that's happening right now is not a good place for me to be in, and I need to leave. You know, to not be judging or to not be blaming, but to just state your truth. This doesn't work for me right now, and I need to leave. So that you can take care of yourself, you know, to not think that this practice means you have to just sit there and let people kind of do what they want, and you just sit there and go, oh, okay, I'm feeling pretty miserable right now. Oh, that doesn't feel very good. You know, that some people take the exploration around investigation to mean that you just sit there and you don't take action. And that's not what this teaching is. We need to know, we need to have some wisdom for ourselves about when it's appropriate to take action. So when is it appropriate to remove ourselves from a situation that's very painful, that's very difficult? Let's see. I'm sure there are more suggestions for practicing in situations like that. I mean, just connecting with your breathing is a great tool in that time. You know, just reminding yourself, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. You know, just staying connected with that and reminding yourself that it's not... one of the pieces of wisdom that you can explore is that this is a kind of a product of causes and conditions. For myself, I began to recognize, yeah, of course I get angry in this situation. Look at how I was raised. You know, look at what happened to me as I was growing up. And this kind of situation, of course this situation is going to produce anger. You know, I don't have to beat myself up about this. It's just like, oh yeah, of course this is the way it is. And so to reflect on that, yes, of course it's like this. And can I breathe here? Can I see if I cannot not just blindly fall into that same reactivity? This mindfulness here is a hugely beneficial tool in our toolkit, because when we can be mindful of what's going on, we have a little bit of a choice. We have a little bit of a little bit of space around things, and so we can begin to recognize, oh yeah, that button's being pushed right now. And rather than reacting by lashing out, as we might tend to, if somebody invaded us, you know, we might start to blame or, you know, lash out at them, which tends to just perpetuate a cycle, a back and forth kind of cycle. Rather than doing that, maybe just take a few breaths. Maybe not speak. So learning how to use the mindfulness to give us a little space to shift our reaction so that we're no longer behaving out of kind of conditioned reactivity, but are more responding and bringing in some more skillful tools like this investigation, like these reminders. Okay, this is impermanent. Another reflection you can make is that the person who is acting is probably acting out of some kind of suffering on their, of their own. And so this can bring in a sense of compassion for our, you know, for them, which can help us to be a little bit more balanced and not quite so reactive. That's like, when people react that way, when people respond, there's something going on in them. It's not all about us. It's often not all about us. We think it is. But, you know, to remind yourself, yeah, that person must be suffering to be, you know, there's something going on with that person to be behaving in this way. So can I have a sense of compassion for them? So I think most of those tools that I offer are in, would be what I'd offer for both of your questions. So I'll leave it at that for that, for that question. And then the last question about thoughts. So first, the first question, is it possible to get in tune with how thoughts affect your body? Well, that's a yes-no question, and the answer is yes. And I think it would be helpful to have a little bit more elaboration on that. You know, how does one do that? How does one explore that? How does one begin to get a sense of how thoughts impact the body? And partly it's an exploration, and I sometimes request this or suggest this in the guided meditation. When you notice that your mind has been lost in thought, and this is a great place to explore this, how thoughts impact your body. When you wake up in meditation, rather than sitting there and saying, wow, I was lost in thought again. I'm such a terrible meditator. I'm never going to get this right. When am I ever going to be able to stay with my breath for more than three breaths at a time? Rather than doing that, uses it as an opportunity to explore, wow, I've just woken up into thinking. What has been the impact of that thinking on my experience? So using that as an opportunity to begin to make this exploration around how thoughts and body are interrelated. So you might, you know, exploring that just in that moment of waking up. That's the first best place to explore that question. How do thoughts impact my body? So you're sitting in meditation and your mind drifts off into some argument that you were having with somebody yesterday. And there you are. You wake up into that experience. Notice in that, okay, I've woken up. What's going on now in my body? Just checking in. What's happening in my body? Have those, and I sometimes ask myself, how has that thought, that set of thoughts that I've been having, how has that impacted me? So exploring that, you know, how has it impacted you? When we have thoughts of arguments, often it regenerates the whole feeling of the argument in your body. Just the thought coming in will do that. Let's just do an exploration right now to give you a sense of this. So just let yourself take a couple of breaths and close your eyes. And I'm going to say a few different words. And just notice what happens in your experience as I say these different words? Just notice if there's any kind of a shift or a change. Frustration. Calm. Struggle. tranquility. Anger. Peace. So did anybody notice shifts with each word? Just raise your hand if you noticed some shifts. So most of you did notice some kinds of shifts. This really begins to give you a sense. And did you I'll ask you in particular, did you feel any of that in your body? A little bit maybe? Yeah, I mean some of it would be mental and some of it potentially physical. What I did was just drop single words in and notice how it impacted your experience. You know, this is a powerful recognition of just a single word, how a single word can influence what's going on for you. And we don't just live with single words popping into our mind. We live with whole stories going through our minds, whole ideas of, you know, who we are and who we were and what we need to do and what they did and how they should do it and why they shouldn't have done that. And this all is influencing our experience. You know, these little drops into your meditation, seeing that there were shifts happening. You know, this gives you a little bit of a sense of how powerful thoughts are in our experience. So we can begin to explore this impact. This kind of meditation gives you a little sense of that impact. But the this looking when you wake up, how is my body impacted? You could particularly check in. Okay, I've been thinking about this argument. What's happening in my body right now? And you may be able to know, you know, beforehand my body felt this way, you know, and now my body, I'm feeling a little bit of tightening in my stomach. I'm pretty sure that wasn't there before. So you can begin to get a sense of how thoughts impact our body experience and our mind. They impact both our, you know, thoughts in our mind. You can have a random thought pop in. In my experience, a random thought of being with a friend at a fruit stand. And then, you know, that whole random thought, all kinds of other things have coalesced around that. You know, my relationship with that person and what they did to me and why they shouldn't have done that. And then, you know, anger is just right ready to pop up out of that random thought. So mental states can also come out of thought. So there's a strong feedback, double feedback between mind and body, between body and mind. You know, the body state will also impact our mind. So there's this very strong feedback between the two. So that's the first place I'd suggest exploring that, you know, looking at how, when you wake up into thinking in your meditation, how has that impacted you? Now, I want to say that... You might have the idea in your mind that all thoughts are going to necessarily make there be some kind of disturbed energy in the body. And just as the last thing I'll comment about here, sometimes I've found when I wake up into thinking, when I wake up into that place, and the mind is just kind of drifting. It's like sometimes the mind will wander out of the present moment, not like charging out with some agenda and some idea about what needs to be fixed or changed or modified or constructed, but just a wander. It's almost like the energy's gotten a little low and the mind has just kind of picked up on the sound of that wet out there, you know, the sound of the wet tires out there, and then the kind of a pleasant sound, and the mind kind of just drifts into that pleasant sound and starts thinking about the way the waves on the beach kind of make that same sound, and, you know, then you're kind of in the space of the mind just kind of wandering in, you know, not a non-charged situation. And then you wake up into that. Sometimes I've found that when the mind comes back into awareness after it's been wandering, when it's been that kind of neutral or non-charged kind of wandering, sometimes there's kind of a more sense of release or relaxation. The body can be more at ease, the mind can be more relaxed in that waking up. If we're not judging ourselves for the fact that our mind was wandering. And what we often will do in that case, we wake up, it's like, oh, I was thinking about the beach. I shouldn't be thinking about the beach. And then any hope that we have of connecting to the relaxation that had happened as a result of that wander is gone because we've agitated ourselves by being annoyed with ourselves. So if you can really just take this exploration of waking up as, oh, how has that impacted me? You know, maybe it's created some agitation if the thought has been charged, but it's also possible that it's settled the mind down a little bit. So, you know, noticing any release or relaxation that's happened as a result of the mind wandering. And well, the best way to do that is to not be judgmental about the fact that your mind has wandered. Because then you've got that opportunity. So it's time to stop now, but it seems to me that there's a lot to say about thoughts. So I think I'll carry on and do a talk next week on paying attention to thoughts and how we can do that. And, you know, this other question of, you know, how do we perhaps let go of thoughts or not stay hooked by thoughts. So I think I'll continue with that theme next week. Thank you all.